So just to tell you a little bit who I am, I've been a president of local or chief officer for 40 years, and I've been on the Connected Board, which is the healthcare. It's sort of like the exchanges, and I've been on that since the day it started. And I'm also now 1199, which is our local number, is also on the Health Policy Commission, Veronica Turner, and I'm on the advisory board. So I am not an academic. I'm a get your hands in the dirt and dig around and investigate and learn. So they've chosen me to do the context of, I think it's important to understand the context of what has happened here to see how we got to where we are today, okay? So, okay, it says down, page up.
Probably if you just hit the enter, it'll go for
okay.
You. There you go.
No, that's backwards. That's the end.
Okay
brains.
Hiya.
I'm guessing as much as you.
Yeah, why did it go backwards?
I don't know.
And I'll just note that this is all being recorded.
Yes.
Did the arrows work?
Yeah, we are okay. Live and not live exactly.
Okay, so I didn't.
We are being
right
recorded.
Error.
So I didn't. I won't swear now that I remember we're being recorded. So in Massachusetts, we first did access to coverage through Chapter 58, which is the quasi model that Obamacare has become. And we then moved on from that, and I'm going to give you a sort of perspective of it. We first did a lot of quality and transparency and gathering of information. That was Chapter 305. Then we had Chapter 288, which was really focusing on price, utilization variation, and alternative payment models. And finally, we came up with 224, which was really an attempt to control costs, to set benchmarks, be transparent about both cost and quality, and hold systems and insurers to that. So we were bipartisan, unlike today in D.C. That's Romney, Kennedy, and it was all part of an 1115 Medicaid waiver, so Bush's CMS had to approve it, and it did a lot of things. It came together because, one, the feds were pressuring us to move money away from just giving it to dish hospitals or disproportionate share hospitals and turning it into insurance for the poor. Blue Cross Blue Shield convened a stakeholders group to start thinking about, was there a way through this waiver to expand coverage? We, Healthcare for All and others, like my union, did an initiative petition to get it on the ballot that there be healthcare reform. We actually got enough to get it on the ballot, and at that point the legislature finally acted to avoid the ballot initiative, but also to get the CMS money, which was about $800 million that was at risk. We did make a very conscious decision. It wasn't like unconscious. We were not going after costs. We had to get people into the system to figure out how you can control costs once they were in the system. Again, we took some monies away. You'll hear about Boston Medical Center or Cambridge Health Alliance. There were dish monies that went to insurance or away from the free care pool. We did reach a sort of consensus. I've been there from the beginning, and I can only think of two votes in 7 years where we did not unanimously agree. We sort of built this model like, if there's only 10 of us in this room and we can't decide what to do, chances are it's going to fail. So Republicans, Democrats, we always work towards a common point of view. And the first consumers enrolled in late 2006 and 2007. We started slow. Instead of having everyone sign up on the first day, we rolled in people in groups of 10 and 20,000 at a time so that we wouldn't overload our system. You can see, you know, it could be 2%, it could be 3%, but you could see in the course of those 6 years how low our uninsurance rate is. Almost every child is insured, and, you know, 97% of all adults are insured. In the first year or two, by 2008, we had gotten up to 420,000 people insured, both through their private insurance, through Medicaid, or through our Commonwealth Care, called ComCare. It's our subsidized insurance. And our affordability standards we set were much higher than the federal guidelines. We didn't have to pay anything up to 150% of FPL. You only had to pay $35, $70, and $110 up to 300% of poverty. If you look at the federal guidelines, this is dramatically different. And at the end of that period, after 2008, the legislature passed Chapter 305, which was really beginning to collect price utilization information and starting to hold public hearings once a year on quality and cost. That had never been done in our state and made everyone very nervous. 2010, this is the next step. So you have 2008, they're starting to gather information. By 2010, Chapter 288, it was a new study commission that was various things. A new study commission to look at provider price and variation. We have the rich providers, we have the poor providers, and we have people in the middle. So looking at where patients are going, the price of care, patterns of utilization. We also began looking at alternative payment models, which some of you would have known as capitation, global payments, where there's supposedly quality standards in there, but paying for population health, you know, a set amount of money to keep that population healthy. The Attorney General focused on causes of variations and concluded in her first report that it was largely the only thing they could figure out was market size and clout that explained why some people were very, providers were high paid and some without that clout were lower paid. Again, there are annual hearings which would go on for 3 and 4 days. Everyone is summoned in to testify about those differences. And we also set standards for insurers that 85, I think it's now up to 90%, no more than 90, they have to have a 90% medical loss ratio. So it's higher than the federal, and they all meet that at this point. And then one of the things in those hearings that started to become clear is that the biggest, while price and while the provider mix and services was, and utilization was some of the cost problem, price was the biggest cost problem. The difference in price and two, where people were tracking and going. So they went from using community hospitals to more downtown academic teaching hospitals or for hospitals that are less expensive to ones that have higher provider rates. So that was part of the problem that 244, right? I'm forgetting it now. The second thing is there were these ongoing public hearings. The connector had stabilized. We weren't growing particularly because we covered just about everyone. And slowly in private insurance markets, seeing all this coming, commercial insurance markets started moving their providers to alternative quality contracts or, you know, capitated payments. And at that point, there's like 35% of all private commercial markets were in capitated payments. It was also true that more people were moving more insurers, companies were using PPOs, less HMOs, sort of contradicting away from fee-for-service, but back to fee-for-service. And that's sort of caused tension. Like, are we a fee-for-service system or are we something else? Finally, Chapter 224, which is the big nut. I think this is the big hurdle that we just crossed. It was to improve care, but to look at the whole, whether you call it medical expenses, which means, or if TME, or what's the new one you're using? Health? Meaning it's not just price, but it's also how you utilize services and which services you utilize. What are the total drivers behind increasing costs? And the governor put forward a bill that says it should be capped to the state gross product. Insurance should not grow any more than the state economy's growing. And it had been, health costs have been growing 2 and 3 times the state economy. It was really controversial. The providers were fighting. The insurers were on the side of the governor. Small businesses were on the side of the governor. There was this big, I wouldn't say public brawl, but it was a very tense time. Finally, the legislature acted and established the Health Policy Commission, which you're going to hear from Aya. And I'd say it does not have strong teeth in it. It has teeth, but not like ones that can take off a leg. They're teeth that will nibble at the edges. But it does have transparency in it in a way that the bully pulpit can use to point out bad players in the system. So it examines total medical expenses. It It ties what we should grow to state domestic spending, and for this state in the last 2 years, it's been 3.6%. That's like less than half than what they had been the providers have been growing and insurers. We tax the wealthiest providers and insurers to help pay for some of this change. We're developing models for patient-centered medical homes where they're registering and setting standards for accountable care organizations. We're trying to move the industry to global payments as much as possible, and it's set up to monitor the mergers in the industry. This is the first time it's ever happened. Our industry is consolidating very quickly, and they have to file through and be examined by the Health Policy Commission. They also set up an all-payers database. You don't need to know the name of all these places. CHIA, which is for Center for Health Information and Analysis. They're putting more information up on price. Insurers are going to have to tell you soon electronically if you're going in for a hip replacement, approximately what that will cost you so you know, and the difference between different providers. They're setting up a 5-year task force to look at what are the health resources needed throughout the state, since so much of it is concentrated in Boston, but what's needed through the rest of the state. There's a healthcare workforce, because when you go to an ACO or a global payment, people really have to think differently, and if you're trying to control costs, jobs that used to be done in a hospital might be being done in the community, so there's a big workforce component of what needs to be looked at. We're standardizing quality metrics. We have two special commissions under this law. That one is to look at price disparities one more time. Why are the rich hospitals getting more? Why are the community hospitals getting less? And what we do about DSH hospital rates, because they've been flat or cut for the last 4 or 5 years. And DSH stands for disproportionate share hospitals. And we're reexamining behavioral health, both how it's funded and how it's integrated into medical homes. So that it is part of the whole system. I think I see a hand. Yes?
You skipped over prevention and wellness.
Yes. There is actually money in, I think it's 30-some million, $57 million that came from that trust fund. It's coming out of that trust to expand prevention programs. So, sorry. Finally, I found Aaron Barros, who is the head of CHIA, when he was doing one of the reports for a hearing. He described Massachusetts as a bilateral oligopoly, which means there's concentration of insurance and wealth, concentration of providers and wealth, and the two of them have led, because of this concentration, to rates that are higher than most of the country. We've actually seen lots of mergers. There's probably been 20-some filings for mergers just since January, and we have still seen the trend that people are going from cheaper community hospitals being treated there in town to the academic teaching hospitals, and there could be a 200-300% price difference when that happens. And the report also found that in 2011, while premiums only grew by 9.7% in 2 years, the value of the benefit dropped 5%, meaning you're paying more out of pocket, even though the price didn't look like it went up a lot. And so one of the good things about the health policy is that it's looking at the total cost, not just who's paying what. And during the same period, insurers increased non-medical spending, administrative costs, reserves by 20.8% during those same 2 years. So just to end so that we can get to them, it took a long time in each one of these battles, 2-3 years, and each legislative move built on the bill prior to it. We started with access, and only attack costs later, because we needed to build unity around the need to insure everybody. We have created growing transparency about costs and prices, and looking at the total medical expenses and not just isolating it to, well, it's $300 there, it's $400 there, you should go to the 300 place. How much are you utilizing the services? Where? We're looking at the whole thing. We did recreate a review process, and as places are consolidating or as prices go up, it's really going to be the bully pulpit that's going to be it, and shining the light on it to the public, that's going to help slow the cost. And we have seen costs slow because of that threat. But I don't think there's that many absolute no's. You cannot do this. You cannot contract with this. You know, there's no ways to actually, at this point, really stop it. But the legislature felt like we needed to get this up and going before we knew what kind of teeth we should put into the system. And, you know, global payments are increasing by commercial insurers. It's soon to be in Medicaid. On the other hand, many more employers are going to self-insured so they can control their money better and not fall under some of these regs. And we are actually seeing a little growth in PPOs and away from HMOs, which goes back to fee-for-service. So there's pulling tensions within the system. So that's it for an overview or start. I hope that was helpful.
Thank you very much, Celia.
We'll do the questions for all three folks at the end. That way, you know, everybody gets a shot at answering the questions. I think that's the first time in 20 years I didn't have to use a hook to get a speaker off. I'm just the beauty of a non-academic. So anyway, another non-academic. Yeah, right. Another non-academic in the queue here. Aya Rahm is, you can tell us what your title is, Aya, but the person responsible in this state for the work of the Health Policy Commission. Aya.
Thank you very much, Rafael.